So it's isolation station two. And we thought we'd do a little recording because we haven't done one for a couple of weeks. Keep our own morale up and everyone else's. So it's the 3rd of May 2020. Deep in the insanity of the COVID-19. So the first thing we want to talk about is the ludicrousness of the current situation. Gets more ludicrous every week.
Absurdity. Total.
Absurd is the word. It's not a word that common people use, but it's certainly a behavior that they exhibit, isn't it?
Sure is.
Indeed.
Yeah. I'm sure if you asked 100 people to define the word absurd, that probably 100 of them probably couldn't do it.
So, what's the most absurd thing you've heard this week about it?
Wow, there's a long list. Yeah. The primary absurdity that keeps coming back, obviously they're orchestrating this psyop from many angles at once. It's a multi-angled attack. So you just hear one ridiculous, ludicrous thing after another. But then, as if you had the big drums in the background drumming, and those big drums keep repeating certain absurdities. And what I've noted today, for instance, is that even when someone sensible points out the absurdity doesn't go away. You know? Like to me, one of the biggest absurdities is to have shut down businesses and to have canceled airline travels. Many airlines are now failing.
Well, they're good bust, weren't they?
Yeah, they've gone bust because of nothing more serious than a common flu. And it isn't even as serious as previous flu years. I mean, if that isn't absurd.
But the thing we keep talking about this week is how did they pull it off? Because they've never actually come out and said that this virus, in quotes, is airborne, it's highly contagious, etc. But the whole planet, near enough, is on lockdown.
Just because of those factors. Yet they haven't, I haven't heard anyone specifically come out and say those factors. What I've heard are multiple absurd characterizations of the virus, you know. Oh, it spreads in the heat, it spreads in the cold, it spreads from children, it doesn't spread from children, old people get it worse. But there's probably some truth in that because that is the nature of the seasonal flu. Tends to take down old people who have pre-existing conditions. But one thing that I have never heard the authorities explicitly say is that it is different. Everyone believes that it is different from a seasonal flu, but they never specifically said it's different in this way. It's highly contagious and can spread in unknown ways, and it is exceptionally pernicious and lethal. And yet, that's what the population believes.
So it's a kind of Mephisto rule. They've done it through, haven't they? It's not what you're actually shown. It's
In this case, it's not what you're actually told. It's bizarre. It's like what you're not told turns out to be the thing that is most daunting about the so-called virus. It's so bizarre.
It's what you're told, it's how you're told to behave because of it.
That's a good point. You're told to behave as if it were this way, but they never say it is that way. Yeah, Mephisto rule. What were we saying? The unstated threat can be stronger than the stated threat. Yeah. So there's a big factor of unstated threat in here. But we were also considering this event from the point of view of pardon my French, but Talmudic magic. You know, there is a kind of Talmudic magic. I mean, the dementia of the Zenosh does propagate itself. You know, it's like insanity can be contagious. So there, it does propagate itself. And so without giving them too much power, because we're always very cautious about that, they don't have real magic. They have the illusion of magic. It's like saying they implanted this phantom of fear in the collective psyche. And, you know, maybe they did that through a ritual. Who knows? They do all kinds of rituals. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe they've been working on it like crazy. They have teams of Lubavitch rabbis 24 hours a day. And somehow, which is the mysterious factor about the archonic infection, somehow they have infected the collective mind with this irrational fear. And it's a perfect tool for control. Because it gets people to control themselves and to act in absurd ways.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Spain, it's been, well, supposedly it's going to be easing up. This is another con. You want to be very, very wary about this.
Well, I've just read that today, yesterday, they eased up on the restriction for adults. So adults can go out for exercise now. There's a shot from Barcelona where hundreds of people were out, not observing so-called social distancing. And in the same report, they were saying that Sanchez, the president, is now looking to extend the lockdown until the 24th of May.
That's another thing. They give you constantly giving the public contradictory information. Constantly.
In fact, Mike, is it Pompey, the U.S. Secretary?
Right, Mike
whatever,
Pompas.
He today came out and said that the virus was, he has seen significant evidence that the virus was developed, modified in the Wuhan labs.
Wuhan.
Thank you. And one of the reporters said, we have seen reports that state that but the scientists saying that this wasn't.
Yes, I know. I've seen those too.
That wasn't, and he, you know, and they said, "So you're saying that, so that you agree with those reports?" And he said, "Yes, I agree with those reports that it wasn't modified." And yet he just said, that
"Yes."
So just how absurd
they're
is that?
Doing this constantly.
Double speak, usual shenanigans.
This is not accidental. It's not because they're confused. It's because they want to confuse everyone else.
What did you hear the wonderful philanthropic Bill Gates say the other day?
He said many things that are so wise and profound, I have trouble recalling them.
And he said about there's probably going to be a second wave.
Yes.
Or bioweaponry.
Yes, that's right. That's right. I did hear him say that. And I clicked on that very strongly because Snoopy said, uh-oh, there you go. They're starting to pre-suggest the next thing they're going to do.
So anyway, I've been trying to watch a lot of things that make me laugh the last couple of weeks. And there's been some pretty good satire been made about the virus that we've been watching. I've been sharing some of it on the Propaganda Antidote. I think Bohemian Rhapsody was top.
There are some fabulous memes coming out, too, ridiculing it. And I'm certain that a good strategy in response to the madness that's on the way, because it's a long way from over, it's very strange because they're in the long game. The Zenosh and those who are orchestrating this are in the long game. But since they believe their goal is near, or I believe they believe that goes in, they're also pushing it very, very fast. Mm. So there's this strange, queasy feeling that, oh, things are just dragging along day by day, but actually they're moving very, very fast. Mm. And so as more and more opportunities may arise in people's lives to actually confront the authorities in person, I think it would be a good strategy to just laugh in their faces. Just laugh and take the whole and treat the whole thing as a joke. Because it is a joke. A very evil joke.
It's a very sick Talmudic joke
is what it is. So laughing out loud in their faces and showing contempt, you know, without being aggressive to them. But I think that that's a weapon that worth considering.
Mm. Yeah. Without coming across as demented, you know.
Or you could go out dressed as a Hasidic Jew with a face mask on and nobody will say anything to you.
Yeah, I've been thinking for a while now about identifying myself as a Jew. You know, that would work.
Well, it's about time you came out the closet, Lash.
I identify as a Jewish grandmother. And I have some chicken soup that cures coronavirus. But only after you've died.
But did all your relatives die at Auschwitz?
Yes, they did. They died of coronavirus too.
Okay, before we move on to the next topic, we had some good news the other day. Well, we thought it was good news. Facebook won't allow nemeter.org to be shared on their messenger service, which we see as a victory.
Yeah, we're showing up. We're showing up now, so it's time to go into action.
Yeah, it's a threat.
So perfect timing for sophanicmyth.org to be released.
So those looks like we might have two shifts of Tara and Budevi, like we just had two shifts of Swandeva. And, of course, you have the dual theme of the beauty of the power of imagination, the beauty of divine imagination. We live in the beauty of divine imagination. That's what the world is. So that's Budevi, the bull, and the Pleiades in particular. And then we have Tara, the wrathful green selector. So there is a massive selection process going on right now. Obviously, if you walk out in the street, you can see it happening. All those zombies with masks and people who are observing social distancing. I hate that term. They must have thought that term up like 30 years ago, and they've been drooling to get it out. Right? It's so offensive. You know, I'm not offended by anything, but that offends me. It's so against human nature because the very nature of social behavior is not distancing. It's a horrible, horrible concept. So the people who are observing that are deselecting themselves out of correction. And largely, they're deselecting themselves out of their own lives. I mean, what kind of lives are they going to have if they continue to behave in this way?
And this deselection process is as well creeping into. I mean, I was listening to Simon Harris interview Chris Dangerfield the other night, and there's another guy, Horace. And Chris Dangerfield thinks that we can't ride on the back of Adolf Hitler, and that Adolf Hitler shouldn't be mentioned in this nationalist movement. And loads of the comments were on that as well. Well, you're selecting yourself out of anything real happening then. Who's going to be your model? Who are you going to look up to? Who are you going to use as inspiration?
Yeah, what about the historical truth of who those people were and what they did and what they stood for? We're going to pretend that never happened and that's going to be good for us? It's to me, it's like saying, well, that truth about World War II and National Socialism in Germany, and the German people, and their mission, and their leader, that truth is too contaminated to use. Mm. But I totally disagree. I am totally convinced that that truth has to be front-loaded into everything we do.
It does have to be front-loaded. And their point was, well, you know, that's too much for them. There's too many years of propaganda. We'll just get them together and we take back our power. Well, you're trying to make eggs without an omelette.
Yeah.
If you're pissed off that your countries have been flooded with Africans, then who's behind that? You can't do it without knowing who's behind it. And then automatically you're going to go to what the Germans did by taking their power back, getting their nation back, rebuilding the nation and kicking the fucking Jews out.
That's right. What we're seeing in the case of Chris Dangerfield and these so-called British nationalists, some of them even pretend to be racial nationalists, are really sabotaging the whole the whole goal that they would achieve. They're sabotaging their power to reach that goal by pretending that they can set aside the most important event that has happened in history that shows us the right path. So I don't know what their plan is. I think their plan is to form some
more intellectual masturbation.
Yeah, and you know, political parties led by faggots and wussies and soy boys. It's not going to go. It's going to come to violence.
Like you said, we were talking about this last night. It's like Chimera said, it's going to be brigade.
Mm-hmm. We used that term. Remember that article?
Mm.
The rise of the freelance brigades. It's not politics that's going to contribute to correction in the collective world, in the large loop. It's brigades, small groups of people who really oppose the powers that be. You know, the powers that be will never give up. They will never concede their power. They have to be taken out by force. That's a bottom line. And that doesn't mean that everyone has to risk their lives to do that, but some people must. And some good people must die so that good can prevail. It's just a fact of life in this world.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to say anything more about the shift?
I'm really enjoying this shift.
It's a bit serene, isn't it?
I'm feeling serenity, I'm feeling steadiness.
Mm.
I think it's wonderful that we're bringing out the first real public promotion, can we call it a promotion, of the Sophianic myth next week with a beautiful montage and a voiceover. So that's consistent with Budevi and
Akajati.
And Akajati is always watching over us. Everyone who's true Shakta has the protection that comes with the Terma. So I'm feeling pretty good, pretty steady. We're really quite productive lately.
And what about what Venus is doing at the moment?
Well, that goes into the DWW23.
Okay, but I wanted to bring it up because she's going into the horns of the bull, isn't she? Between the horns of the bull.
She is in the horns of the bull right now. She's going to make a retrograde loop in the horns. Mm. And we were talking about the horns as...
Well, Zorba the Hun, let's give him the credit because he came up with it. Because the bull obviously is about sound affinity as well. And if you can picture the horns of the bull in the constellation, it looks like a tuning fork.
Two horns can be compared to the tines of a tuning fork, and she is right between the two horns. So she could say that, and she goes up to the tip of the horns, and around the 15th of May, she's retrograde. So all of this will be visible in the evening sky after sunset. Typically what happens when the planet turns retrograde is that rather than moving from right to left through the constellations, Ram, Bull, Twins, she's going to move backwards from, she's not going to go back into the Ram, but she's going to move back toward the Ram. And you observe that backward motion by seeing how she drops lower in the sky every evening. And she drops back to, I think, 9 degrees of Gemini, which is near the eye of the Bull.
Aldebaran.
And Aldebaran. And then she goes back and retraces her path through the horns of the bull again. So that's a major event to be observed in the coming few weeks.
Do you still want to talk about the strange attractor?
Yeah, I'm presenting a model relying upon our art designer, Lisa, to modify a little bit the model of the strange attractor. And one of the modifications will be in the big loop. So in the big loop as it is now, there is a loop, and then there is the core of that loop, which is the authorities, the misleaders, the deceivers, the people who want to spoil and ruin everything, the people who are controlling society and the finances, you know, they are running the collective. But I picture another loop loosely forming around them so that there's a second loop inside the big loop. And that would be the people who are manifesting defiance. So in the collective loop at large, we have compliance, obviously. And yet there is a wave, a movement of defiance developing. Mm-hmm. So I think that changes the dynamic of the strange attractor.
And that's on the outside?
No, it's on the inside.
On the inside.
Yeah. So it's a smaller loop within the large loop. So that illustration will be up on Nemeta in a few days.
Okay. For anyone that didn't see it, I posted it on the Treehouse Forum. I think it was on the Treehouse Forum. A friend of ours, a Finnish Shakta, sent us a message the other day with an image. He'd been sat. He was listening to the Happy Birthday Adolf Hitler audio we did. And a police car drove past him with right. the number plate, JLL88S.
Yes. Yes, there are omens. So we've had quite a few omens since the beginning of this shift.
Mm.
I forgot that I had done a unit on the omen concerning the puma who was seen in Santiago.
Mm.
So Santiago de Chile and Santiago de Compostela is not far from where we are right here. And of course, Santiago refers to Saint James, who was the Zadok, the leading Zadok in the biblical comic book known as the New Testament. So that was a major omen. I forgot that I had posted a deconstruction or decoding of that omen. It has some very powerful components to it. Omens are happening in the sky. Last night you saw an omen.
Yeah, but I'll tell that story when I've told my other story. And then you're going to tell a story.
And what's your other story, if I dare ask?
So my cording that I did the other day.
Yes.
We played Carly Dice Oracle the other night. Crooked Claw and some other friends are working on getting that actually produced. Working very hard on getting it produced. So we had a throw of Carly Dice Oracle the other day. And the throw was R4.
R4.
So the throw designates what the topic of conversation is going to be about. So we started talking about what we can do as her ground force.
Yes.
Collectively as her ground force.
Yes.
All of those of us that have the disposition to become involved in something like this. And a little plan developed from that throw, which was rather wonderful, I thought.
Which was?
Oh, we're going to do it now?
No, remind me.
About people learning to flex their telepathic muscles.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yeah. Let me go find that line. Okay, here it is. Each of the throws, 21 throws of the Kali Dice Oracle, has a signature line. And this is the line for, no, we didn't get G4, we got
R4, wasn't it?
R4, right. Where clan and cell gather, starlight forms. The form of starlight is fractal, pentagonal. And so staying on that topic, staying on that subject, we developed a conversation which led to what?
Well, you're the orchestrator, and you've been trying to think of ways that we can gather as Shaktas
And combine our power.
And you obviously don't want to set anyone up, and you don't want anyone to fall into pretending. So it's been a very difficult position for you to be in. But I thought we kind of formulated it quite well the other night.
Yeah, the conversation led us to come up with a plan for using the Shakti cluster app to get on a telepathic band together to communicate telepathically. And we're going to set all this out. We have kind of instructions to follow. It's an experiment, like it always is. And we want to strengthen the tensegrity of the telepathic connection that we already have, and flex our telepathic muscles, test them out.
Build them.
We have very specific ways to do this. It's quite a simple plan, though. Mm. And that would be the prepping for a follow-up, which would be an actual action that we would take using our combined power.
Yeah, using our combined power and using the floret of the Shakti Cluster app.
Because the floret has 5 points, and the signature line talks about the power of starlight is fractal, pentagonal. So we're going to use the floret for a very specific purpose. And we're going to work with the internal floret to activate our connection to her dreaming power and to test it.
As a ground force.
As a ground force. To deploy our power as a ground force into her correction process. This is what we're going to be doing.
Yeah.
In these two shifts.
So the next day I went out for a walk and I took some cords with me. When I select a cord, whatever colour I'm selecting, I have a reason for selecting it, so it represents something to me. I had five cords.
Five colours.
And what I did, which I thought was really good, actually, when I came back and showed you, you said that's a really good idea because then you've got a record of the cording. I took a piece of all the five cords and I cut them to the same length and I held them in my hand. I tied a knot at one end. And then as I was walking to the spot I was going to go and cord in, I was just holding them in my hand and playing with them and working out the syntax.
Holding the intention.
Yeah. So by the time I got to the place I was going to do the cording, the syntax was crystal clear. And I did this cording. And I've been doing it for 5 years, and I've never got in such a tangle as I did with this cording. I'll post a photograph of it with this audio. One of the colours I chose was the same colour as the Israeli flag, the blue in the Israeli flag. And that was the one that just got so... I ended up leaving the whole ball. I left the whole ball in there because I was just so tangled.
Yes.
And that's never happened to me before. And it was really, really powerful. Cording, the wind was blowing really fiercely from the south. I was calling out her name a few times. And every time I called out her name, the wind would suddenly stop. And then it would build up again. I was just playing with the wind. Really powerful cording. And then when I started walking back, I was waiting for someone to catch up with me, who disappeared. And I saw a man on the path about 100 yards away.
This is like a farm track through the hills.
It's just a farm track. And all the time I've walked on that farm track over the last 3 years, which is plenty of times, I've bumped into two people. And there was suddenly a man on the track. And I kind of stepped to one side and hid because I didn't want him to see me and I didn't want to have to talk to him. And then I kind of peered around the tree and he completely disappeared.
This is when you were coming back from the cording. By the way, clumps in a cording, in case people don't know, are acceptable. One of the first things that I learned from doing cordings up on the ridge was that the cord gets tangled, and sometimes you get these clumps, and sometimes they can be small. Yours obviously was very large. And you don't stop and make a conscious effort to unravel it, because that breaks the power of the cording, because the power of the cording is in the spontaneity, and doing it fast without thinking. And so you leave these clumps in the cording, and what they represent is the things that cannot be fully resolved. They represent situations that cannot be fully resolved and have to be left to be just eliminated because they can't be worked out. There are things that can't be worked out. So obviously we can't work out. The Rome can't work out their relations to the Zenosh. There's nothing to work out. So it remains like a clump that just has to be eliminated eventually.
Mm.
The power of the rest of the cording will take care of it.
So I came back here and was glowing, apparently, and was very excited about the cording I'd just done. It was probably it felt the most powerful one I've ever done. And we were just sat around chatting, and I said, oh yeah, before I forget, I saw a man.
And he disappeared.
And he disappeared. There was nowhere for him to go, and he disappeared. I've even been back there and checked that I wasn't fabulating. There was nowhere for him to disappear to. There's a high hedgerow on one side, and then
field that drops down on the other side, right?
Yeah, and a pine wood on the other side.
So if he didn't go down into the field, you would have seen him, yeah.
No, it's very odd. So I said that to you, and you told me the story about the guardian of the ridge in Andalusia.
Yeah, I have a similar experience in the early days at the ridge. And the way it played out reminded me of something that Carlos Castaneda said about allies. He said a lot of different things about so-called allies, like power plants are allies. You know? But he said that when you find a place of real power, there will be an ally there. There will be someone who lives there, what form it may take. Is not possible to say, but it often does take the form of a person. It takes a human form.
Well, of course, you were sharing your story, and you had told me that story before, but you'd never said his name.
That's right.
And you did say his name that time.
Right.
And so I was asking, what was he wearing? What did he look like? And the man I saw looked like a workman. Your man looked like a workman.
Yeah, and the instances in which Castaneda related his episodes of sorcery. He said, I remember in one case that the ally just looked like a workman sleeping in a plowed field, and he couldn't figure out why there would be someone out there sleeping in the plowed field, and then the next time he looked, he wasn't there. So I had this experience when I was coming down from the ridge once. Well, it was sort of set up by something that used to happen almost every time I went up to the ridge. I would go along the same track along the back of the dragon formation of the rock. And then I would come to a boundary where I would step down on the ground. And there on the left, there was this plant, which is kind of like a yucca plant. And it was very dry and spiky. And I had noticed from the first times going up there that when I came to that point and crossed the boundary to approach the ridge, it would rustle like there was a bug in the plant or something. The leaves of it would rustle slightly. And I also noticed that just off to the left of that plant, there was this beautiful little place, very inviting little place, surrounded by these small olive trees and a couple of oak trees. A very gentle, like, bed in the grass. It was something that, like, invited you to go and lie down there. So I had formed the idea that that was the ally of the ridge who was signaling me through that spiky plant, and that he slept there in that place, you know. So I had that concept in my mind. And then one day I was coming back from the ridge, and I got down to my car, and I got in the car, and I drove on the windy road back to the junction, the main highway that goes down to where my house is, or goes up to Galcine. And I noticed that there was a man standing there. It was like a worker. He had on a cap, and he had on a workman's clothes. And it was odd, because I never saw anyone on that road before. And he was standing at that junction. And I looked over my right shoulder as I stopped, because there's a stop sign, And I kind of noted him. And then I pulled out and turned up toward Gaussin, and then I looked back and he was gone. And that's when I knew that I had seen the ally. And so the next time that I went to the place where he stays, I got his name. He told me his name, and his name was Raul Aldeña. And so this is a rule that others can follow. Don't be surprised if a stranger or mysterious or random person may show up around a place of power, and respect them, because that could be the ally who guards the place. Well, so it's really not a person. It's a supernatural entity who takes the form of a person for a moment.
Well, I'd completely forgotten about that. You told me that story until you were telling it again the other night. So of course, I was hanging off every word because I wanted to see if John's man looked the same as my man. And I said, did he wear a hat? And he went, yeah. I said, what colour? He said, well, kind of tobacco beige. I was like, my man was wearing a beige hat.
Same hat.
Cap as well, yeah.
Same cap, yes, yeah. A worker's cap, exactly. Yeah.
And where I did the cording is actually, it's, you know, it's a single line planted pine wood. But there is something very magical about that pine wood. In the autumn, the floor is bright red. It's carpeted in amanita. And it's just really pretty.
And it has a floor of the thickness of a foot of pine needles.
Yeah, you could walk on it barefoot and it'd be like walking. Yeah, very beautiful. Okay, so and then last night there's a farm by us and they got a beautiful dog chained up all the time that we all love a lot. So we sneak down there in the middle of the night and give her fresh meat and bones. So I did that last night at 1 o'clock in the morning. When I came back, I was looking up and there was a dog moon.
Moon dog.
Moon dog, I can never say it right. There was a moon dog, which, if any of you don't know, it's when the moon has got a very big circle around it. So I was looking at the moon dog. I was looking at the circle and then I noticed that there were more circles around. It was like somebody had plopped a pebble into still water. So there was a ripple effect going through the sky along there. So when I came back, I got you, Crooked Claw, to come out and look as well.
Mm. It's stunning, isn't it?
Yeah, really.
Really beautiful.
So we were discussing that, and I said, I would take that as an omen that your courting was received. And it also relates, I realize now, to the throw of the dice.
I picked that up when you read it out again. Yeah.
The form of starlight forms, starlight gathers. So if you picture starlight as a pool and you drop something in the pool, it forms these fractal waves, concentric fractal waves, just something like what you saw. I didn't see it, but... Mm.
So the intention of that cording was to kind of give her a little nudge that we're gathering.
The Shaktas and the Kalikas are gathering their power for yet another adventure.
Yeah. And that's it, I think. Nothing else to report apart from, let's end it on this note. Unless you've got something else to say. We finally came up for a new word for chakras.
Yes, we were working on a nugenics model of the standing figure and the aura and so forth. That's also developing really well. And the operation that we're going to, the working that is in the works with the floret will refer to that model as well. So we came up with a word for chakras because we don't like it.
It's so new agey, isn't it? I mean, I know it wasn't originally, but it's so polluted. Mm. It makes me have a little bit of sick in my mouth when I say it. We've been saying for ages we need to come up with a new word for chakras.
Mm-hmm.
So, autogenic circuits.
Yes, AC, autogenic circuits, right. AC/DC. Right. And DC is the direct current, and AC is the alternating current. So there's a play on those terms. So in the Shakti cluster, the 17 points exclusive of 18 are AC, autogenic circuits, and they have an alternating current. But the 18th point is DC, direct current, right? So that's AC/DC.
We're all grinning like Cheshire cats.
So on that happy note, we'll leave you. The Cheshire cats will disappear, and we'll leave you with our smiles floating in the air.